no criminal charges brought against those who have an abortion or against healthcare professionals who provide and assist in an abortion. Abortions in cases of fatal fetal abnormality will be allowed. Just some of the guidance from the government for healthcare professionals on abortion law in Northern Ireland. It sets out what will happen following changes to the law here after 21st of October if the Northern Ireland executive is not restored. Gráinne Teggart from Amnesty International is with us this morning. Good morning to you, Gráinne.
Good morning.
Good morning. And Dr. Anne McCloskey, the deputy leader of AN2. Good morning to you, Anne.
Hi, Stephen. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning, Gráinne.
No charges against healthcare professionals who provide and assist in abortion. Your reaction to that? Let's start with you, Dr. McCloskey.
Well, speaking as a doctor, I qualified over 30 years ago. We know that when we're dealing with a pregnant woman at any stage in her pregnancy, that we are caring for two lives, two separate heartbeats, two separate sets of genetic information, and that both lives require our care and protection to get the best possible outcome for both of our patients. If I prescribe some sort of drug to a woman who's carrying a baby, I will be liable for that under law if it harms her unborn child. And yet I think this now moves us into totally uncharted waters where doctors will be expected to facilitate the giving of drugs which will deliberately bring about the end of the life of one of our patients. And I think it's just a huge about turn in the way that we have organised ourselves as physicians, really since the time of Hippocrates. I mean, abortion drugs have been around for a very, very long time. Hippocrates practiced medicine 600 years before the dawn of Christianity. And, you know, even at that time, it was recognised that the protection of the unborn is something that law and common practice and the way that we organise our lives should be central to. As recently as March 2016, we had guidelines published here which says that the law doesn't allow intervention that have the sole purpose of ending the life of the fetus. And now, 3 years later, with the help of our local elected representatives going to Westminster and lobbying, we have an imposition of a law here which not one single person in this state voted for. So I'm terribly concerned about it, yeah.
Gráinne?
We welcome the publication of the guidance, of course. It gives much-needed clarity for the interim period of October to March. It means that no longer will women and those who need these services be treated as criminals. And we know from medical professionals that the criminalisation of that healthcare has long compromised the care of their pregnant patients. It's very important that people understand that decriminalisation is not deregulation. This is a heavily regulated sector. But significantly, the changes that we will see take immediate effect are that those who have been given a fatal or serious diagnosis with the fetus no longer will have their healthcare exported, that they can access these services locally. And also significantly, for anyone who self-manages an abortion during this period, so anyone who purchases and takes abortion pills, that they too can now go to their doctors to seek medical assistance without fear of prosecution. And we know, of course, that prosecutions have and are a reality in Northern Ireland. So for the mother who faces prosecution for buying abortion pills for her then 15-year-old daughter, her charges in that case will now fall away. So these changes for that mother and for many others simply cannot come quickly enough. The other significant change is that obviously we've known for some time, it's been in place, that anyone who travels for an abortion service in England and Wales, that the service is free, but the travel was always means tested. Now the travel will also be covered. So the majority of people in this interim period we can expect will continue to travel, but will have those expenses covered.
I do think the public will want to engage with us on this morning. 030 30 80 55 55. The NIO guidance for healthcare professionals in Northern Ireland, it gets into really interesting territory around conscientious objection. And here's what it says. It says consideration is being given to providing for conscientious objection in the new legal framework from the end of March 2020. In England and Wales, the courts have found that the scope of conscientious objection in relation to abortion is limited to participating in a hands-on capacity in the course of medical treatment bringing about the termination of the pregnancy and does not include the ancillary administrative and managerial tasks that might be associated with that treatment. So in other words, and let's put this to you, Dr. Anne McCluskey, my reading of that means that certainly how I'm interpreting that is that doctors, a GP, for example, they would not be able to refuse in Northern Ireland to assist a woman who wants to have an abortion. So they would have to give her the advice as to how to get one. They would have to give the morning after pill. They would have to do things like that. They couldn't refuse, Anne.
Mm-hmm. You very well may correct. I mean, I just had a brief look at the guidelines. I haven't had a chance to read them all, but as far as I can see, doctors who have conscientious objection, it says, or doctors or nurses or midwives or porters or ancillary staff, as you mentioned, have to raise the matter with their employer. Now, as you probably know, GPs here are ostensibly self-employed, even though we're contracted by the Department of Health in order to provide services. So we must raise the issue with ourselves. I think that doctors will have to be prepared to resign or go to jail. You know, I certainly, when I practiced, and I still do locums, would not be happy with ending the lives of one of my patients, even though legal protection has been removed from them. And I think what you will find is that this will make very many fields of medicine a very cold house for doctors who value the right to life from the earliest to the end of people's days. You will find people choosing careers other than medicine. I'm aware of a young anaesthetist at the moment who's working in England who is finding it very difficult to, you know, do his work without participating in a hands-on way.
Yeah, but it's clear what hands-on capacity means, doesn't it? They spell it out in the course of medical treatment. Participating in a hands-on capacity in the course of medical treatment, it does not include ancillary administrative and managerial tasks. So
they will have no protection whatsoever.
Well, they will have to. If someone walks into a doctor who's against abortion, if that doctor is of that view, they will have to hand over a morning after pill. They will have to help in the ancillary administrative and managerial tasks in Northern Ireland for someone that wants an abortion. Should doctors be forced to do that?
In my opinion, Gráinne Taggart, certainly not.
Gráinne Taggart, should doctors be forced to do that?
Let's just actually start out very clearly what the document does say on conscientious objection. It says that doctors should refer to the central booking system, which is the system which people go through to access termination services in the rest of England. It also sets out that there's no expectation to prescribe abortion pills, but of course they can do that if they so wish. It also says that if there is a conscientious objection, to raise that with your employer and then to refer to the professional guidelines which are already in place, whether they're GMC, so General Medical Council, or NMC, which is the Nursing and Midwifery Council. But explicitly it sets out that if you have a conscientious objection to a particular procedure, that you would tell the patient about their right to see another doctor and make sure that there are basically timely referrals. It also says that you must not express your personal beliefs to patients in a way that would either exploit their vulnerability or likely cause them distress. And then it also says that you cannot obviously unfairly discriminate against patients or colleagues by allowing your views to affect your professional relationships or the treatment you provide. So actually, it is quite comprehensive on the conscientious objection. And again, whilst we don't have it on a statutory screening in Northern Ireland, it is already in place in the guidance from the Department of Health. And again, in the professional guidance. So I don't think we should scaremonger around that point.
No, but look at paragraph 57. You must not refuse or delay treatment because you believe that a patient's actions or lifestyle have contributed to their condition.
So the delay.
You must not refuse or delay treatment. So if a woman has got pregnant through whatever circumstances, a doctor is not allowed to refuse treatment, refuse helping with an abortion. In other words, you could interpret it as that because they disagree with the patient's actions in getting an abortion. That's not scaremongering.
And what would happen in those circumstances is what already happens, which is that doctors have a responsibility to then refer their patient to another doctor or healthcare professional who doesn't conscientiously object. There's really nothing new there.
Can I come in now, Stephen?
Yes.
This all presupposes that the majority of doctors accept this sort of wisdom that Amnesty International, et cetera, put out, that abortion is healthcare. Most doctors understand that abortion kills one of their patients. It's not healthcare. The other thing is that abortion is never a benign procedure for a woman. Particularly, we know that a disproportionate amount of people presenting for abortion have very little support. They're subject to intimate partner violence, poverty. Very many cases may have been as a consequence of abuse. So that, you know, this one size fits all. I would like to see these guidelines, for example, including the requirement for children, very young people, you know, to have a full comprehensive assessment of their circumstances so that we can genuinely support women to make better choices for themselves.
Here's Michael Yudnabi.
Babies and harms ladies.
Good morning, Stephen. I'd like to ask Grainne Taggart a very simple question. If a patient came into a doctor who wanted either the morning after pill or an abortion pill, based on the simple assumption that it's an unwanted pregnancy, would Grainne Taggart and her organisation support any legal action against that doctor?
So let's just set out clearly what has just been legislated for at Westminster, because it is not the situation that you have just described. Abortion is being made lawful in cases where there's a risk to health.
You're not answering my
crime.
Question, Grainne.
No,
hold on, let her finish, then you can come back, Michael.
Of what we're introducing. Yeah. So, as I've set out, so abortion is being made lawful in cases where there's a risk to health, where there is a serious or fatal malformation of the fetus, and also where there is where the pregnancy has risen as a result of sexual crime. If someone goes to their doctor and their doctor wishes to express a conscientious objection, the answer to that is quite simple. They refer them to a colleague who doesn't conscientiously object and who will enable women to access that healthcare service.
Not answering my question, Grainne. You have refused to answer my question. If they ask the doctor for a morning after pill because they may be deemed to be having an unwanted pregnancy, and the doctor refuses, are you going to take the doctor to court?
I mean, that's simply not a matter for amnesty. And can we just not conflate?
And that includes baby.
Sorry, can we not?
Your organisation represents human rights, and that includes your unborn baby. It's a human being. So you're discriminating against the unborn baby's chances. You're also discriminating against the doctor on his conscientious objection to refuse a morning after pill based primarily on it being an unwanted pregnancy. Please answer the question. Are you encouraging or will you support a person who comes in for that reason and that reason only, and the doctor refuses the morning after pill? Are you going to support that person by taking that doctor to court?
Your question neglects the reality of the environment that medical professionals are already working in, which is that, let me finish, which is the conscientious objection is already provided for, both through professional guidance and also in guidance from the Department of Health. The answer to that in each individual circumstance is to refer on. And there's a wee bit of conflation here between abortion pills and actually the morning after pill. The morning after pill is not an abortifacient. Abortion pills, obviously, they when taken.
So you're telling me that a person that comes in the night after after sex and wants a morning after pill is not. You're telling me they're not acknowledging the fact that they may be pregnant?
No. I'm saying it is not an abortifacient because it may be pre-implantation.
I am telling you.
So we're getting into the technicalities, obviously, of implantation, etc. But I think it's important that we create the distinction.
That's why you refuse.
And the point I'm in here, just for a second.
Hold on. One at a time. Michael, what do you think? Michael, what do you think should happen?
I think that here's the bottom line, Stephen. If someone is pregnant, right, and they know that they're pregnant, and a doctor, based on what your doctor that is currently on, says that their absolute sole interest is in the preservation of the life of both human beings, that it is wrong, and this is where the problem is going to increase, Stephen, that someone is going to come in having an unwanted pregnancy. Once they find out it's an unwanted pregnancy, and they're going to actually threaten, and they will enforce doctors to go to court. And that's where we're leading with this. So, and Grainne Taggart refuses to acknowledge that. That's the problem that we have. We believe fervently that life occurs at conception. And the minute that happens, then the right of both the lives should be protected. But under this legislation, the doctor faces a court. The doctor faces a criminal charge being laid against them.
I'm not sure if that's true.
That is true, Stephen. That is absolutely true.
Can I just come in here?
Yes.
Yeah. I think it's important to recognise in all of this that the very, very hard cases that most of this legislation, you know, that gets this legislation pushed across the finish line, deals with only a tiny, tiny minority of abortions which are carried out. The vast majority, something like 98%, are done for healthy women with healthy pregnancies. And they also, the other thing that this new law is that it refuses to take into account. For example, last night, East Antrim District Council, at 26-6, of their councillors voted for Stormont to go back to stop this pernicious legislation. And we know that 6 out of 11 of our councils have passed this. So this is out of touch. On two occasions in Belfast recently, we had 20,000 people assembling at Stormont and in the streets of Belfast saying, this law is not in our name.
Can I just...
So it's important.
Yeah, just before we go to more calls on this morning, 030 30 80 55 55. I see dropping onto the news wires at the moment is something from the BBC's political editor, Laura Koonsberg. And she is reporting, in a separate story, obviously, to what we're talking about now. Laura Koonsberg is reporting that the Prime Minister spoke to Angela Merkel, the German Chancellor, this morning at 8 o'clock. And a number 10 source, and this is the information I'm bringing you, which I know you here in Northern Ireland will be very interested in. A number 10 source is saying that... Angela Merkel told Boris Johnson that there could only be a deal on Brexit if Northern Ireland stays in the customs union. And if not, then a deal is overwhelmingly unlikely. And there is more and more copy dropping as we speak on this story. Northern Ireland very much at the centre now of this national network story. And it is that if Northern Ireland does not stay in the customs union, then no deal will happen. Number 10 says the Prime Minister stressed, this is as Laura Koonsberg is reporting it, to Angela Merkel, the UK believes they had put forward a reasonable new deal. This demand of Northern Ireland staying in the customs union makes a deal, quote, essentially impossible, is what Laura Koonsberg is saying, a number 10 source has told her. Number 10 source says talks in Brussels are close to breaking down, despite the fact the UK has moved a long way. And today's 8 a.m. call was described as, quote, a clarifying moment. And to give you a sense of how much Northern Ireland is a lock to all of this, 4 minutes ago, Laura Koonsberg has reported the following. It feels like any chance of a deal this month just died. So, I'm sure there'll be more on that throughout the day here on Radio Ulster. Alex is in London. Morning, Alex.
Well, good morning, Stephen. I thought we had done and dusted this discussion about abortion. I think your doctor, whoever she is well out of order. She mentioned that she'd be responsible if anything. She can correct me if I got it wrong. That last beat you were talking about is taking my mind away from it. The Brexit thing just shifted my head away from it. But anyway, she or any doctor are responsible to ensure that a patient has been looked after correctly and properly and is answerable by law if he, she has got it completely wrong. So it's not just abortions, it's anything. Look, a doctor, I just can't get my head around it. It's not her job to decide what's right or wrong. If I wanted a facelift and plastic surgery, I'll have it, and she will probably do it, getting paid for it. But the point is, it's not her...
If facelift and plastic surgery, nobody dies.
Oh, well, just a minute. Hang on, I didn't cut across you, and I don't want to tend to do so. I think you're completely out of order. If a person wants a procedure, i.e. an abortion, it's not you. You're not God. You're not judging. You do what's necessary to do, and get on with it and stop preaching about what is right and wrong.
I think we need to let her reply.
Right, okay, thanks.
Well, I just go back to the way I started this. Doctors, since the medical profession was formed in the mists of time, have always regarded dealing with a pregnant woman. We know there are two patients. You can Google this now. You can see the incredible continuum that is the development of the unborn human, the place where each and every one of us began. You can see it. The way the baby, from the moment of conception, forms straight through to the moment of birth and right through childhood. you know, there is no part in this line when we're not human, so that we have a responsibility as doctors and as all healthcare workers, including ancillary healthcare workers, to look after the dignity and the best outcome for all of our patients.
Yes, well, that's fine, but that's contradicting what a particular woman wants, is it not? And by the way, you're going back, I think you said you qualified about 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I think things have moved on quite a bit.
I worked last week, Lou.
Sorry?
I worked last week.
And
I still work as a doctor. Oh. And these fundamental moral principles.
Listen, hang on, sorry. I said you qualified 30 plus years ago. I didn't say what you were doing yesterday or today.
Yeah, well, how's that relevant?
It's relevant.
Okay, let me bring in Peter in Belfast. Morning, Peter.
Well, Stephen, what I don't know, like, that I are, man, like, is, you know, you get going on there about, you know, the women. If they're raped or the illnesses or the serious illness, I agree with it. But, like, everything, why do, I've heard her arguing about women shouldn't take the pill, forced to take the pill, but they've no problem taking an abortion pill. But why not do it, stop the thing happened if you don't want a baby, it's easy. And for that guy, all he's talking about the doctor, as far as I know, a doctor's thing in life is to protect life. So if that doctor believes the girl's pregnant, there's two lives, so what's wrong with it? What's hypocritical about it? Just doing what she believes in.
I don't think it's not really a question of belief. It's the way things are. It's where every single human being on this earth started. We mightn't like the biology of human reproduction, but we can't change it. And as I say,
I'm agreeing with you there to protect life, and you're doing what you think's right as a doctor. And I think, you know, this old guy Alex on, you think the way he was talking, the girl was going to get a haircut instead of having an abortion.
And I think there is a fundamental difference here. Well, no woman or no individual takes the decision to terminate a pregnancy lightly, so let's not reinforce harmful stereotypes.
One in four pregnancies.
What we're actually getting to is a place where finally we will have a compassionate response.
Unfortunately,
to pregnancy, it's been a long time coming.
Unfortunately,
and
we're out of time.
I've looked after hundreds of women in crisis.
Gráinne, thank you very much indeed. Dr. Anne McCluskey, thank you.